Now, we all know job interviews are stressful. Just a 1 hour, generally, a conversation can have a huge impact on your career future, your confidence, and yet too many of us still leave it to chance. Well, my next guest is a careers expert and author who's literally written the book on the dreaded job interview. To find out more about how to rapidly improve your performance, whether you're a first-time job seeker, career changer, or returning after a break, I'm delighted to say I'm joined now by John Lees, author of Knockout Interview, from the author of How to Get a Job You Love. You've written many books on this subject. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
Great pleasure.
So just tell us, how important is the actual job interview?
Well, the interview is a gateway, isn't it? And it's between you being one of a crowd of people applying for a job and getting close to a job offer. So it's an absolutely critical stage, isn't it? And if you've got one, you're doing well, but then there's a lot of work to be done to make sure that you show that you fit and you're attractive to the people who would like to hire you.
Are they the best way of finding the best candidate for the job?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? And employers have tried lots of different things over the years, testing and telephone interviews and video interviews. But as I say in the book, I think it's interesting that the face-to-face conventional interview is still there and it still matters. And that's because although on the surface interviewers are looking for things like skills and experience, they're also trying to check chemistry as well. They're asking themselves, will you fit in? And also, will I look good if I hire you? Will I look good to the team when you walk into the room for your first day at work?
Before we get to the actual job interview process, there are a few things that perhaps you should think about before you go into an interview. I'm thinking doing your research is one, but also things like how you look, your appearance.
Yeah, well, most of the work you do in the interview is well before the interview itself. So if your idea is, well, I'll make it up when I get there, that's not going to work very well. So yes, good research, thinking about what the organisation's looking for, thinking about how to translate your experience into terms that employers are going to find interesting, and also, as you just suggested, how you come across in the opening minutes of the interview. And that's part of the way you look, the way you sound, the way you move, looking as if you're calm and confident. Speaking clearly and slowly, for example, in the first few minutes is one of the things that really helps.
What are the things that we're getting wrong the most?
I think it's not preparing, and I have great sympathy with candidates who don't want to really think through what the experience will be like, because the real reason behind that is a kind of fear. They don't want to visualize the process. They'd rather trust themselves to come up with something in the moment. But about 80% of interview questions are highly predictable just by drilling down and looking at what an employer needs and what they're looking for. And if you've done the work in advance and pre-packaged your evidence so it comes across in interesting short stories, which is the way I describe it, then actually you've done all the work that matters in advance. And while you're in the room, you can concentrate on listening really hard to the questions and also on establishing a good relationship with the people the other side of the desk.
I mean, you say it's good to be prepared, of course, absolutely. But how can you make sure that you're not so prepared that it just seems really rehearsed?
It can seem over rehearsed, can't it? That's right. So let's take an example of thinking about a difficult question that you might be asked, maybe about a gap in your CV or you didn't finish a qualification or something along those lines. So it's great to know where your answer is going to go so that you've got in mind a sort of two or three sentence structure. But learning it word for word sounds quite sort of mechanical and false. So that's the general guideline, is know really where your answer is going to go. You don't have to be absolutely word for word precise, and leave enough room for sort of flexibility of expression. But don't use that as an excuse for not preparing, because clearly an employer has a shopping list, and if you can match most of the items on the shopping list, then you're going to do really well.
It must be quite difficult to get the balance right between sounding confident, relaxed, and as though this is almost a chat and you're telling stories rather than having off-row answers, to it being a little bit too informal.
Yes, I think that's right. And you're going to take some of your cues from the interview style of the people talking to you. But the best interview feels as if it is a conversation. But that doesn't mean it's chatty. It means you've got to keep focused. And keeping focused means listening really carefully to the question. So it's not the question you think is going to be asked or you hope will be asked, but the actual question. Keeping your evidence short and focused. And one of the reasons you do that is you're giving the interviewer the opportunity to get through the checklist of things that they want to get through during the course of an interview.
If they decide that the interview location should be, say, at a coffee shop, I've seen that happen, or indeed a pub, or somewhere outside of the conventional office environment, does that mean that the tone of the interview should be different?
I think the tone will be, but the purpose won't be. So if somebody says to you, it's just a chat, you've really got to ignore that. It's always an interview. Even if somebody's taking you out for lunch, it's still an interview. And that doesn't mean that you're presenting or behaving particularly formally, or you're being distant, or you're being closed or difficult. What it means is you keep the focus. So you're not going to be distracted into giving lots of background information or chatting about things which are nothing to do with the job. And you're the guest in this process, and the interviewer is the host. And I think that's a nice way of looking at it. So however the host wants to run the event, you go along with that. And one of the ways we do that is by not actually talking too much, by listening to the question and giving short and focused answers.
Don't they say that you've got about 60 seconds when you first enter an interview process with which someone has made up an impression of you, and you have to spend the rest of that process either confirming what the interviewer thinks about you or changing their mind? How can you make a really great first impression?
Well, there's a lot of truth in that. We are actually really good at processing information about other people. And it goes back to kind of our awareness of safety and danger in earlier sort of generations. So the way we do that is we quickly assess, do I like this person? Are they easy to talk to? Is this going to be a good experience? We can't assess somebody's skills and experience in that 60 seconds, but if you focus on being easy to talk to, looking confident rather than flustered, dressing as if you already work there, that's a nice way of doing things. It's a slightly smarter version of perhaps what people are wearing in the office, but you look as if you fit in. Then if you get those three things about right, then you've got less work to do later on.
And before we focus on what you actually say, what about your body language?
Yeah, body language is important. So sometimes what we do is actually coach candidates about how to get into a room and so you don't actually fall over pieces of furniture. And one of the tricks is don't carry too much stuff. If you're nervous and your hands shake, then don't accept a cup of tea in the interview room, because you'll probably find that it's shaking in your hand. So just go into the interview room maybe with a copy of your CV, a copy of the job advertisement in a folder, and that's all you need. Learn how to do that so you can sit down calmly and quietly. And even if somebody's asking you about the traffic or the weather, then make sure that your answer is clear and not too quiet and not mumbled or rattled out too quickly. So you start as you mean to go on.
You said that you might be shaking a little bit, that tea in your hand. How do you calm the nerves? Have you got any tips on that?
Well, yeah. If you get a dry mouth, for example, it helps to have something sweet, sugary before going in, like a black coffee with some sugar in it. That works better than water. If you know that your hands shake, then, as I said before, don't accept a drink in the interview room. Keep your hands still. Generally, keeping still and looking alert is one of the ways not only of controlling nerves, but also of looking focused and attentive in the room, looking as if you're really interested to be there. But being nervous isn't always a bad thing, you know, because it pumps some adrenaline into your system, which makes you think a little bit faster and can increase the sense of enthusiasm for a role. So if you look as if you're excited to be there, that's not a bad thing at all.
Well, we know the sort of common, more traditional interview questions that you're likely to be asked, but what about if you get thrown something that you really weren't expecting? I mean, that can completely derail you, can't it?
It can do, but it's worth saying that most candidates are thrown by questions which they should have expected, the questions relating to the main content of the job. But yeah, there are wild card questions. Interviewers ask them because sometimes they think it separates the best candidates from the rest of the pack. Sometimes I think it's because they're bored and they want to try something a little bit more entertaining. But, you know, a question like, if you were going to Mars, what three things would you take with you? Or how do you nail jelly to a ceiling? Or any of these mad questions that interviewers love to ask. Let me tell you, they've got nothing to do with job performance. But they are pretty good at judging how you will react when you have to think on your feet. And also what your sense of humor is like. So even if you can't answer, just laughing and saying, that's a really great question, and I bet you've had some fantastic answers to that. You know, that's what they're looking for. It's the kind of, how does this land, rather than you having a perfect textbook answer.
In that regard, then, are there right and wrong answers to questions at a job interview? I suppose it's how you qualify the story that you tell.
Yes, I think right and wrong is a difficult one, isn't it? Because if it works, if it moves the interview forward, if it convinces the interviewer that you've got the right experience, then it's working. One area where job candidates get into difficulties is that they convey and communicate negative information, or they just really haven't thought about how their experience relates to the job on offer. So that's wrong in the sense that you're trying to think your way through the process while you're in the room, and that's always a dangerous thing to do, because you then start to either discover that you've got nothing to say, or you offer vague or negative information about yourself. So any opportunity, any moment, if you like, when you're starting to talk about what you lack, or where your gaps are, or where you haven't done something before, that's taking you into dangerous territory, because you're giving an interviewer a reason to exclude you from the process.
Now, one of the things that I puzzle over, or perhaps get a bit nervous about, is whenever you're asked the question, you know, obviously you've been looking at our website, obviously you know what we do, how would you do things differently? What would you change? What did you like? What didn't you like? How honest should you be?
Yes, that's a good question. And thinking about looking at the website, you know, weaker candidates, what they tend to do is to trot out phrases from the organisational website. So don't do that. One of the things is to talk to people who know something around the organisation, so you pick up a little bit about what they're looking for. But your point about asking for improvements, don't tread on toes is the answer here. And also don't sound as if you think you can solve every problem overnight. So good one for a bit of preparation here, which is to talk about quick wins. So maybe a bit of your experience which would be helpful, or something you've tried before, or a couple of ideas that you'd like to try out. If you sound as if you want to change everything, or what you're looking at is entirely wrong, you're in dangerous territory, because you could be criticising the work of the person sitting in front of you.
Now, John, I imagine if we're talking perhaps to, and I could be wrong here for the national stereotype, so apologise, to the American audience, it might be different to that of the British. We are traditionally perhaps not the best at selling ourselves. How do you sell yourself without coming across as arrogant and it be a comfortable scenario for you, particularly if you're not used to doing that?
That's a really good point, isn't it? So I think one of the ways that we prepare for interviewing, and also prepare for other things like networking and having an active job search, is we need to learn to talk about ourselves in a way that feels honest and authentic. So there's no use me trying to coach somebody to sell themselves hard, where they're the kind of person that would much rather say, this is something I've tried, I think this might be helpful in my experience. So you've got to find the right kind of opening phrases that allow you to present a piece of evidence from your past. Now, for some people can say, I am brilliant at, but they're a minority. And if you do that badly, it sounds empty and wrong. So it's about learning those phrases which allow you to present a piece of material without sounding egotistic. But the danger is if you don't present it at all, if you don't talk about what you have done and what you've done well and what you're good at, and where you've achieved something, then you're not actually ticking boxes as far as the interview process is concerned.
So the final one, and it tends to be the final one of an interview, is, again, another thing I think I struggle with, are the questions that you ask them. And it's so very easy, isn't it, just to say, you know, tell me more about the environment in your office and the things that we think about. But how can you actually ask a killer question, a knockout question?
I probably wouldn't try for that one because it's a wrong piece of advice to say an interview is a two-way process. In other words, you're testing them as much as they're testing you. That really is wrong. The process of a job interview, the purpose of it, is to get you an offer. So if you ask really difficult questions at the end of an interview, it sounds like you're saying, I'm not sure if I want to work here. You haven't given me enough positive evidence. The best questions at the end are questions about the future of the job. So what will I be learning? How will I be trained? What opportunities will I have? How will the job grow and expand? That actually helps the interviewer see you in the job. And once they've got that picture in their mind, let me tell you, it's quite difficult to shake that. That's one of the convincing factors that gets people job offers.
Well, that's it. If you've made a bad impression at the start, is there any recovery?
I think so, yes, because, yeah, it's not true to say that that's your only opportunity. What you've done is send the interviewer's brain in a particular direction. So you can claw it back. Interviewers are much more tolerant than people think in terms of dealing with nervous candidates. But what they find difficult is behaviours which repeat all the way through the process. So, for example, not warming up or not giving enough information or not listening properly to questions or, very commonly, talking too much and saying things which are not really relevant. If you maintain those behaviours, then what you're actually doing is saying, I don't really fit in and I'm not what you're looking for.
What about money? And I'm not suggesting when you ask the question and they say, would you like to ask us a question at the end, you say, yes, how much will I get paid? But generally now they're sort of nipping it in the bud, the interviewer. They'll say, what are your expectations? Does that mean, firstly, you've got the job nailed? And secondly, what should you respond to that?
I don't think it means you've got the job nailed, but it is a buying signal. I think we could agree that it looks like there's some interest. The technique really is to give a broad indication, but be much more specific if and when an organisation starts to negotiate a job offer. So one of the techniques I would recommend is to do a bit of research to understand what the salary range is for the kind of job that you're looking for, and then be able to give some reasons why you'd like to be paid in the top end of that range. And the other even simpler one is to say, well, I'm being interviewed for jobs paying in this range. So you're starting to sort of give a sense of your market worth. But it's really not a good idea to try to get bogged down in pay negotiations before somebody has decided to offer you the job.
I just want to ask you about the idea that there are definitely some people that are great at interviews, and there are some people that perhaps not so good at interviews, but that will do a better job. How can you hone this skill of interviewing without having to go to a lot of interviews? Because the problem therein lies, people say, oh, just go along, try it out. But it can seriously knock your confidence if you're just going to a job interview, not for practice. Of course, you're not going for practice. But this idea that it's okay, I'm learning from this experience. Yes, but it also could be knocking you a lot.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I really strongly recommend people not to go for practice and not to consider an interview as a rehearsal. Go to interviews where you want the job and put in the best performance you can. And that actually means not using interviews as a rehearsal space. There's lots of other ways of doing that. You know, you find people who've got any kind of hiring experience or recruitment or HR experience, and you practice parts of your interview process with them. You say, listen, I know I'm going to be asked this question. This is how I'm going to answer it. Or this is how I'm going to talk about myself. Or this is how I'm going to talk about some of the problems with my CV. Does this sound right to you? Does this sound convincing and authentic? So, in other words, we do the rehearsal bit and the planning and the trying words out, trying phrases out well before we go into a decision-making space. Because, going for the practice means that you'll get it wrong, but get it wrong means that you will, you know, you put yourself into a negative position and it will knock your confidence. Mm.
John Lees, author of Knockout Interview, I assume in all good bookshops?
I hope so.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.